This is Market to Market producer Colleen Bradford Krantz. Stand by for the Market Analysis Podcast. Send us any questions or comments to markettomarket@iowapbs.org.
This is the Friday, January 15, 2021 version of the Market Analysis segment from Market to Market. Hello, I'm Paul Yeager. A blizzard of news this week as a storm blew across the nation's midsection and President Trump was impeached for a second time. The economy as a whole gave another indication of its direction and if inflation is on the horizon. The consumer price index rose 0.4% as a hike in gasoline prices fueled the increase. Wholesale prices measured in the producer price index gained 0.3%, again driven higher by energy. Retail sales fell for the third straight month. The mark declined 0.7%. A series of bullish USDA reports gave a major boost to the commodity markets, and we have assembled a panel to discuss the ramifications as we look forward. Ted Seifried is the chief market strategist at Zahner Ag Hedge. Naomi Bloom is senior market advisor for Total Farm Marketing. Don Rose is founder and president of U.S. Commodities, and Matthew Bennett, co-founder with AgMarket.net. That is our panel. We'll hear from them in a moment. Now the weekly closes as a stack of USDA reports fed the market bulls. March wheat gained 37 cents, while the nearby corn contract skyrocketed 35 cents, or 7%. Despite big gains, to sales to unknown continued in the soy complex. Nearby soybeans added another 42 cents. March soybean meal increased $23.60 per ton. March cotton expanded 93 cents per hundredweight. Over in the dairy parlor, February Class 3 milk futures fell 50 cents. A down week in the livestock sector. February cattle lost $1.70. March feeders declined $1. And the February lean hog contract shed 77 cents. In the currency markets, the U.S. dollar index gained 69 ticks. February crude oil added 7 cents per barrel. COMEX gold fell $18.90 per ounce. And the Goldman Sachs commodity index improved more than 2 points to finish at 428.35. It is against this backdrop we gather to discuss this week in the markets and also the months ahead. And you can tell by that weather, we are split into two different rooms, actually three. So we'll have everybody can hear each other and see each other, and you just enjoy that program. So, Don, I'm going to start with you just for the sake of experienced on these USDA reports. Have you ever seen such a bullish combination and the market respond the way it did on Tuesday? Have you seen that before?
Well, you know, we have, Paul. We forget about it. But on this final report, this report, usually it's a little bit more measured. You know, you take the yield down to 3.8 bushels an acre on the corn. Really what it signals is our demand is too strong for the supplies that we have right now and that we have to ration. So it's one that's work in progress. But what it really did is set the tone going into February now for the next month. We have a whole new set of supply-demand factors that are bullish again. So the bull gets fed after this report and consequently had a strong move up this last week.
All right, Matt. So the bulls are feeding. Are they? What is going to keep them going the most? Is it the government reports, the weather, or is it something else?
I think it's going to be a combination. But one thing I'd like to point out is this report. You know, you dropped quarterly stocks, December 1st stock, 600 million bushels. We just dropped the crop 325 on 2020. So there's a lot of interesting stuff going on here. I mean, obviously, two quarterly stocks reports in a row, you lose 600 million bushels total, I guess, out of the 2019 crop. Very interesting. But regardless, what's going to drive it moving forward? I guess, in my opinion, you have to obviously keep an eye on South American weather. We know that. But we are going to be setting a crop insurance price here before too long. And I think there's going to be a battle for acreage. And, you know, the battle for acreage the last few years has been a hot potato type game. But this year, I think we're actually vying for acres. And I do think that at this stage of the game, it's pretty tough to get down on these markets considering what we've got going on from a stocks to usage ratio, both for corn and beans.
Ted, biggest surprise from the report?
Yeah, you know what? I can't agree. I can't disagree with the two of you guys more. I'm sorry. But look, we have been trading a bullish scenario in the corn for some time, and that was really based on the supply side of things. We saw the USDA rip the Band-Aid off by lowering the yield as much as we've ever seen from a November to a January report. We saw, to Matt's point, 325 million bushels come off of last year's production, 76 million bushels of production come off from the year before. We saw our quarterly grain stocks number that was really very bullish. These are all numbers that are retrospective of where we've been coming from, and the corn market had been responding to that and telling us these things from a long time ago. But going forward, to your guys' point, we need to feed the bull. We are not in a situation where we have a price rationing scenario for corn. In fact, the USDA just said we lost 250 million bushels of demand because of the higher prices. Going forward, if corn prices continue to go higher, I worry very much about ethanol. I worry very much about what's going to happen with our exports. While the export sales are really very good, we're only 26% shipment-wise of the USDA target. Can we logistically hit the USDA's target, even if we have the sales? We'd have to set pretty close to near-record weekly sales averages to hit the USDA's target. Will we logistically be able to do that or not? I don't know. I think we just saw the most bullish USDA report for corn that we're going to see. I think the speculators have taken hold of this market, and we've seen things like this happen. We see it happen all the time. Look at Bitcoin. Look at Tesla. Look at the stock market as a whole, for that matter. So let the speculators run. That's all well and good. But as actual market analysts that we, you know, we pay attention to balance sheets and things like that, we have to understand that we're maybe overrunning the mark here on corn. And as producers, we need to be looking at this as a great opportunity.
All right, Naomi, I'm not saying you have to pick a side, but do you have a different side in this debate we haven't thought of?
I think the biggest thing producers need to just be monitoring right now is what they can be doing for additional starts for sales for old crop and for new crop. I mean, quite frankly, that's what people want to know. So here's the pricing ranges that you need to be watching for both corn and soybeans. For the March corn, your trading range right now, 520 is support and 550 is resistance. I could see us trading in a sideways pattern for the short term. On the new crop corn, your trading range that we're looking at, 450 was a big number that the market was finally able to get through for December corn. We're above it right now. So the next upside target is closer to the 475 area and ultimately $5. So thinking about making those cash sales, to the point of these guys, you know, we are supported going forward, but now are we at the point where we see a setback? And when you look at the soybean market, March soybean futures, well supported right now at the $14 range and below there at $13.75 and above there at $14.50. For new crop beans, $12 is a significant resistance point that you have to be watching. Thinking forward, if we grow an additional 6 million acres of soybeans this year, if we have trendline yields, you're still looking at ending stocks for the next year coming in somewhere between 150 and 300 million bushels. So that keeps the scenario tight going forward. There's opportunities there. Ted makes a great point about maybe this market has priced in all the bullish news it can for the short term. We have inauguration next week. There is a lot to watch. There's a lot to manage.
All right, Don, I read in a thing I got in the mail from you, and it laid out bullish scenarios, bearish scenarios. You had to publish that thing back in November. The things have changed so dramatically. Are we done with the most dramatic changes in this market over a six-week period, or are we just, we've hit the first part of that roller coaster and we still have more bumps to hit?
Well, you know, I think we're in for some real volatile times. You know, I respect what everybody is saying, but, you know, the bottom line, actually going forward, nobody really knows, because what happens is like a card game. As the cards come out, you find out what's going to happen. If South America has continued problems, you know, that's going to be another push to the upside. You know, there's no doubt about it. We're using stuff faster than we're our production. You know, the same thing. If we get into weather problems here, you know, it's going to be another issue. So I think what's really happened at these price levels, we've got a lot of volatility ahead. You know, we've been in an uptrend now for a month. To take a pause and to meter and to see once what the next leg is going to be up or down only makes some sense. And I think that's really where we're at. The structure of the market is pretty bullish yet. We haven't seen any real signs of rationing. That's always a look back when it's all over. But that's about where we're sitting.
Ted, the R word has been used twice now, rationing. Do we see rationing in corn or soybeans in the United States in 2021?
Yeah, okay. So we're talking about two completely different animals, right? Soybeans is a market that aggressively needs to price ration. And to this point, we continue to see daily, four out of the last five trade days, we've seen daily sales on the wire. We haven't completed the job on soybeans. And to me, that's the most bullish thing about the corn market right now. we have started to ration demand, at least according to the USDA. We've started to ration demand in corn. We don't need to ration demand in corn. If we continue to ration demand in corn, we'll end up at 2 billion bushel carryover. Does that justify 550 corn? I don't think so. Again, I'm not terribly bearish corn at the moment because I'm bullish soybeans, but it's not the corn market that I look at seeing and say, wow, I'm really very bullish. Now, throw in a problem with our growing season, and that changes things completely. But between now and then, I would think at some point we could see a healthy pullback in the corn market. And even if we don't, if this is where we're starting to make sales for old, whatever we have left to sell in old crop, if this is where you're making sales, you're wildly profitable. I mean, come on, let's get on that. And then as far as new crop is concerned, I think you need to be at least 30 to 40% sold for new crop at this point.
All right. So, Matt, I guess I was going to ask you or Don this, but I'll ask you, Matt. What percentage of your clients right now are still have some old crop to sell?
There's no beans that I know of. I mean, there might be a few here and there, but quite frankly, most people are completely out of the beans. As far as corn's concerned, you know, it's been interesting to see, for instance, this week, basis have been really screaming for quite some time. And then in central Illinois, we saw us pull back just a little bit. And I do think there's a fair amount of grain moving, but at the same time, I think there's a lot of producers that are still holding on to, oh, I don't know, anywhere from 25 to 50%, you know, of their old crop corn stocks, anything that they have in the bin. They've been a little more stingy with, of course, stuff that was in commercial facilities, I think has been priced or some sort of a transfer of ownership there. But, you know, I think that the main thing for me is that, you know, when you look forward for corn, some of these buyers are telling me that they're still having a hard time being able to get a hold of corn on farther out. You're seeing really good basis push, you know, whenever you get into that Feb March timeframe. So I think that cash grain is still going to be awfully good property. But I would agree with Ted. I don't know why a person wouldn't want to sell some 550 corn, you know, or 5 1/4, whatever your basis is, or whatever the true price that comes to you. That's the best cash price for corn you've received in 7 or 8 years. It's pretty tough for me to, you know, to thumb my nose at that.
All right. So, Naomi, I guess I'll ask you as well. I mean, is there any incentive to be selling if you've got old crop, given the run we've had? And I'll say corn or soybeans. You can pick either one. Is there a reason for anybody to sell, knowing what our past has done in the last 6-8 weeks? Because you're like, it's going to go higher, right? Or am I way off? Right.
Well, so the thing again, right now, the market is keeping an eye on a few things. So it's keeping tabs of just the trading range that the market's in. We're watching the fund positions near record longs. So if in the bigger picture, we are well supported going forward and looking back 2007 into 8 and 2010 into 11, the funds started building their long position at harvest and they continued to stay long overall until June. And that's when the market peaked in those years. So the funds can get long 400,000 contracts and then they can ease up a little bit to 300,000 contracts, but then still overall hold that long position. For producers, I think we saw a lot of sales here recently with the USDA report. We saw a lot of sales because it's a new year and it's a new tax year. So they're ready to start making those sales on the books again. And I agree with Matt, a lot of producers probably holding on to 25 to 50% of old crop yet, but it is time to keep moving on things. You never know when the next black swan could be around the corner. And then as far as much higher prices to come, I think Ted said earlier, it could just more be tied to summer weather, which of course is 5 or 6 months away. So do keep an eye on the value that is in front of you. But at the same point, this is a fundamental situation so much different than where we even thought we could be. And the fundamentals are going to keep us supported into 2021.
Yeah. First of all, Paul, you know, I've been hearing in the last few days that, you know, guys are going to the elevator to dump and lines are longer than they were at harvest. Right. So you are seeing some of that cash move right now. Secondly, whoever's not selling the old crop corn right now, you're trying to make up for selling beans too early. And I get that. But guess what? Forget about that. Look at where the price of corn is. You've got the opportunity. It's a good time. Go ahead and do that. As far as soybeans are concerned, if you have any old crop soybeans left, I want you to take something into this growing season. Make China come and get them is what I'm going to say.
All right, Don.
Well, you know, I just think when you look at the market overall, you know, what the market's really about is if we're not rationing going higher, how do you ration going lower? And, you know, these markets, I mean, I agree with everybody. There's no doubt you should be scale and selling from a producer standpoint. But I'll also remind people, you know, from a trending system, you never know how high it can go. I can remember we went to $8 and it was the same type of talk that we had. A market ends violently, these markets like this. It's not a market that goes up like it has so far. I mean, you go up like 20, 30, cents, you know, for a few days in a row, and then you spike and top. So I think no doubt you need to be selling stuff at these levels to manage things. You can also change ownership, make some cash sales, and then change your ownership into some options.
All right, I want to take
escalator up, elevator down, right?
That's
exactly right. I want to take one of the questions we got from Twitter this week. Thank you so very much on Facebook and Twitter. Great stuff. This one I want to start with Chad and Grimes. Matt, the adage for the cure for high prices is high prices. So what are your favorite two or three factors that you watch when the signal, which may signal a fundamental shift to the downside? What are you watching, Matt?
Well, I think obviously you got to watch export sales. You know, are we going to run so high that we're going to scare off some export business, first of all? You know, whenever you look at ethanol profit margins, there's no question that there's a lot of angst moving forward. Obviously, ethanol has been through the ringer in the last 12 months. It's gotten over some hurdles. But, you know, moving forward, if you run the cash market too high, there's no question that it's going to cause a little bit of frustration for your ethanol industry. And I think that you could definitely see some pullback there. But if you start pulling back on those two, I think that those are the ones that I'm going to look at closest. Obviously, you know, feed demand could be affected, but it's not going to be maybe quite as quickly reacting as what those other two factors might be. So those would be the two that I'd be watching the closest whenever we start to think that we're running things a little bit too hot.
All right, Naomi, do you have anything different than either of those two?
Also, in addition, I would say to keep an eye on the value of the U.S. dollar. It's been starting to creep a little bit higher here lately. That is, of course, tied with the exports. But then just in general, there's a lot of things to factor, not just two or three, keeping an eye on South American weather, of course. And with ethanol, I think we've already seen the reduction from COVID. So we have plants that have been idled. And I think the most recent thing I saw was 24 out of 200 plants in the country are still idle. But if you look on USDA reports, that lost demand is accounted for the most part. So going forward, as long as the vaccinations continue to surface and continue to be distributed, I think that's a good case for ethanol demand, gasoline demand, and just for the economy in general. And then that also correlates to feed from the standpoint of US consumers getting ready to go back out to eat, going to summer festivals. The demand is going to be there for protein, which is, of course, still good for grain.
All right, hold that on the protein side of things. Ted, I have a question here I'm going to ask. Paul on Twitter asked, he's Northeast Iowa farmer, and this is something you've kind of alluded to, and you may even know this question's coming. Why is the spread so large between nearby soybeans and November 21 beans? It makes it hard to get excited about pricing new crop. You've kind of talked about it.
Yeah.
But answer this one a little bit more for me.
And actually, there was a question that Paul and I had talked about earlier in the week, too. Okay. So, in a bull market, this is what you see, right? The front month rallies further than the back month. The reason for that always is that even if we think that supplies could be tight in next year, we're trying to carry as much carryover as we can over into the new year. And this is a function of price rationing, the lack of supplies that we have here. We know that it'd be very, very difficult to bring in soybeans on a mass scale up from Brazil, aside from the beans that every year go to the eastern seaboard, Port of Savannah. We know that's going to happen. But to bring in, say, 100 million bushels from Brazil, I don't even know if we can do that. Logistically speaking, if we can figure it out, it's going to be super expensive. So, you know, what you're looking at is you're looking at how tight this market is going to be going out in June, July, and August for our domestic end user, for our crusher. That's the problem. You've got that November contract lagging behind because the thought is that we're going to see a significant increase in soybean acreage. Now, I'm not sure that's going to happen. I think we will see an increase in soybean acreage, but I think we're also going to see an increase in corn acreage. What I will say, though, is that it is an interesting spread to play. You know, that spread has run out to about 360 before in the past. But typically, in normal circumstances, this 225, which is right around where we're at right now, to 240 is usually where that spread peaks out. So that might be telling us something. One of our other friends of the show likes to talk about spreads a lot. I think this is one of those scenarios where that's a spread that is maybe telling us something at this point.
All right, Don, I got to ask you two things here about wheat and cotton. We touched on acreage a little bit. Wheat and cotton have both rallied a lot. Is that in an effort to try to entice people to plant their crop, to get acres next year?
Well, we're going to have a fight for acres next year. There's no doubt about it. But the wheat market's running. The largest wheat exporter in the world is having a real concern with food inflation. they're trying to figure out how to slow down the food inflation, so they're trying to back up supplies into their market. And so consequently, they put a tax on, 82-cent tax for exports in mid-February, and then $1.65 for March 1st. But so that's it. But, you know, I want to just back up a little bit as far as the spread situation. The market is really super afraid that we're going to have the same carryout next year on corn and beans that we have this year. More so, you know, we're worried about what the farmer does. November soybeans are trading 60 cents higher than July 22. Can a farmer carry soybeans from November 8 months and lose 60 cents? So that's really where your next marketing is. What are you going to do about that if you're a producer? And it tells you how fired up this market is to get the acres next year.
Well, Naomi, we've got an issue where it comes to the protein markets. Higher prices for feed make it really hard to make money if you're a cattle feeder right now. Is that right?
Well, that's what the feeder cattle market is responding to. The feeder cattle market for the past 3 weeks has just been working lower overall, as the grain markets have been rallying. And so that struggle is there. You are starting to see the deferred live cattle futures take off and ratchet higher. There is a lot of thoughts that the demand is going to pick up. We're also going to be seeing lower supplies. In fact, the total production between first quarter and second quarter for cattle is supposed to be about 95 million pounds lower, and that is counter-seasonal. That's not a normal thing. Part of that is just left over from COVID from last year. So it's unfortunate news for the feeder cattle market for right now with these higher grain prices, but I am really bullish to cattle looking at those deferred contracts.
All right, Matt, you were shaking your head there a little bit. Which one has a better upside? Are you bullish both live cattle and feeders in the long term right now?
I have a hard time being bullish feeders for right now. I mean, in my opinion, you know, with feed costs the way they are, I mean, it certainly isn't going to be something that's typically supportive to feeder cattle. But I'm like Naomi. And, you know, I think that there's other people that are like Naomi and I, and that, you know, you see this big carry, nice carry in the market, healthy looking market. There's no doubt that I think the industry is expecting that, you know, these big supplies we've tried to chew through here in the first quarter that we're going to still be working through at the start of the second quarter. You know, those aren't going to be around near as much as what you're going to see in the third and fourth quarter. And the nice thing about beef demand is beef demand stayed pretty darn strong here in the last year at times whenever you would have thought that it wasn't going to. So, you know, I do think that you'll see a little bit of an uptick whenever people go to restaurants. But as I've said before, I'm pretty sure people ate a heck of a lot of beef whenever they were barbecuing at home too.
That's
which
right.
Which is a really good thing for us to see.
My freezer still has a lot of hamburger from the summer. Ted, in 1 minute on hogs, is there a worry in that market that a lower near-term cattle market is going to pull that market down? Is there another factor at the hog market?
Well, I think we might have already seen that over the last five or six trade sessions. I think when it comes to hogs, what we have to do at this point is get rid of the notion that China is going to come in and buy a massive amount of U.S. pork based on ASF issues that they had in the past. Look at the soybean demand that China has. Their hog herd is stronger than we ever thought it would be possible this quickly after ASF. They just put a lot of their pork supplies out, their state reserves out into public auction. They've got the pork. But our domestic demand has been really very strong. And I look at the Feb hogs, that double top that we have at 72. I don't really think double tops are a real thing. I think at the very least we'll go back and test that 72 again. I'm bullish. I think we'll go beyond that. I'm looking 76 to 78.
All right, Don, 20 seconds. Is there a livestock market you're excited about in the next 6 weeks?
Well, I think when you look at the livestock, we also have to think about the grain market, because what you're really doing is putting a lot of grain premium into all these markets in the livestock, too. You can see the back months of cattle hogs making new contract highs, so that's the real issue. Keep an eye on it. I think high price grains is high price meats.
And I've been keeping an eye on the clock, as have the people in the control room. Don Rose, thank you so very much for your time. Also, Matthew Bennett and Naomi Bloom and Ted Seifried. Good to have all of you. We know how this thing goes. It goes ridiculously quick. Thank you all. That will do it for this installment of Market to Market, the TV show. We will talk more in the web version we call Market Plus, so you can join us there. Find that on our website or wherever you watch YouTube videos, usually YouTube, at markettomarket.org. The social networks have caused their own series of news this week, so we want to let you know that we still have our email inbox turned on for you. Drop us a line anytime to markettomarket@iowapbs.org. Next week, we'll look at the acreage battle from the cotton perspective. Until then, thank you for watching and have yourselves a great week.